This is Unsocial Spectators with Clay Harrison and Mark Ramsey.
And you can find us at unsocialspectators.com and also at unspectators on Twitter. Welcome to episode 55 of Unsocial Spectators. Hello.
Hey now. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just had some lunch. Well, I am coming off a week of like fucked up pain. Like I had a bad week of pain. I had like an ice pick headache all day Friday. I had just now we're going to turn it into the Pain Chronicles with Mark and Clay. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was just a fucked up week. So I've just had to kind of recover and just not really do a lot. So, I got into Grindhouse and loved watching Death Proof again, so I'm ready to talk.
Okay. What was your movie from 2007?
Death Proof and Planet Terror from the Grindhouse combination of Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino. And it's just fucking fun. Like, those movies are just fun. They're not trying to go out and win Academy Awards. They're just a take on the great Grindhouse films of the 70s. And why most of the... There's, like, so many, like, 70s films that are cult films still.
Sure.
Because they kind of keep that alive. But I think we talked a few episodes ago that, like, because you watched the two movies, like, separately and not... The way the theater had them, like you didn't get to see all the trailers.
Well, I saw it at the theater, but...
Oh, you saw it at the theater. Yeah, it just wasn't...
But recently I watched them and they didn't have those trailers.
Yeah. I watched it on Plex and the beginning of Planet Terror had the trailers.
Mm-hmm.
But not on Death Proof.
Yeah. I think this is the same.
Yeah. But Death Proof is just one of my favorites because it has that weird, wacky ending. It's all done it down in Austin. So when I got to go down to Austin, a buddy of mine lives down there, Stone. He knew that where that Texas Chili place is, where they had the scene where they all go drinking.
Oh, yeah.
And so we been there so we got many together. Times. Yeah.
Yeah. The Death Proof car was outside of Chewy's. No, not Chewy's. A local Mexican restaurant.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I would see it when I was on South Congress, you know?
Yeah. Rose McGowan just doing double duty, kicking ass with by playing... two characters. She gets to play the victim of Stuntman. I want to call him Stuntman Snake Plissken, but Kurt Russell. And just the beating she takes in that car is just fucking brutal. Like, that is... And that's after you've already get to... like, you see that one wreck that's before that where that girl's leg just flops on the road after they hit head on. Holy fuck. Like, there's just so many wild scenes in these two films. And to me, these are just guys honoring those kick-ass films with the blood, boobs, and beast.
Is
the,
it
the Grindhouse movies of the 70s.
Is Stuntman Larry?
Stuntman Mike?
Yeah, Mike.
Mike, yeah.
Stuntman Phil?
It's never going to be Stuntman Jeff.
No. Stuntman but, Bruce?
Yeah, but then Rose McGowan opens Planet Terror by being, you know, a dancer, and then she loses her leg and gets this fucking badass machine gun that she gets to go and fucking annihilate zombies. We get a cameo by Bruce Willis, who's awesome. All he does, I can't imagine after working with Bruce in Pulp Fiction, that Quentin's just like, just come in, you're going to play a general, I'm going to have you do like three scenes and you're done.
Sure.
Just be Bruce and kick ass, like give him the looks, because he does, he just basically uses the camera on him a lot without dialogue.
Bruce has done a lot of movies for 2 days.
Yeah. I wonder if this was the one where he figured out, you know, I could work less and make more.
Exactly.
But I always wonder about like the movies he's made for the last 10 years because you just don't know who was really making the decisions because of that disease he has, says he can't communicate. So how could, you know, I don't know. I've tried watching some of them and it really kind of hurts me to watch knowing that he's sick doing these. That they usually will set him up where it's like he's in a doorway or he just has to be like in a scene talking to someone, or he's just a shot by himself appearing to talk to somebody. And if they have a good director who's knows how to shoot both ways, then it looks like it's really taking place. But you can tell a lot of times it's just Bruce Willis in a room by himself. It even sucks for the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Like after Unbreakable, I loved seeing what was the second movie? Beast, the one with the Professor X guy. I'm sorry, I'm losing my mind here. But that was fucking awesome. And then the third film, when they brought them all together in that Unbreakable universe, Bruce just wasn't there. Like that was just kind of empty. I felt real bad watching that movie.
You mean Split?
Split. That's what it is. Yeah, second movie was fucking fantastic. And then when it alluded to the Unbreakable universe and we got that third movie, Glass is just, I mean, I wanted to see Bruce superhero and just got a guy who wasn't all there, it seemed like.
Well, that's too bad, you
Yeah,
know,
but
when.
you know, I'm gonna always live on his classic films like this, and his work with Tarantino is always fun. I mean, Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
And we're coming to the point where a lot of our heroes, music heroes and film heroes are, you know, they don't
Prince,
have much longer to go.
David Bowie, Eddie Van Halen. Man, I saw a video of Robert Plant the other day still trying to sing and shit. I mean, not trying to sing, the fucker can sing, but it's still amazing to see who's out there still kicking it. And Mick Jagger, of all people, how the fuck is he still alive? And he's still like making babies.
Well, it's possible.
It's just not the best practice to do when you could die any day because you're old as fuck.
But he has a shit ton of money. Who gives a shit?
I
I
guess it's
mean,
weird.
who cares?
He just lives a weird fucking life to continue to just keep making kids at his age.
I don't fault him for it.
If that's your hobby,
Sure.
it's just people you're
I mean,
making.
he's got what? 700 million dollars or something ridiculous like that.
I don't know. What is.
$600 million. So I mean,
Yeah,
he.
that says that he's the Rolling Stone with the most money, over 500 million.
So who cares?
He makes 1.5 million a year just on Spotify. Wow.
Because of the Rolling Stones and also the all of his solo work
His
too.
solo work, yeah. I forget about his solo work. Anyhow, that was my movie for 2007. What'd you watch?
No Country for Old Men.
Oh man, that movie is so good.
It's a perfect film, man. It is a perfect film.
I know I always like start to go, you know, that's maybe the best Josh Brolin film. And then I go, well, maybe it's the best Tommy Lee Jones film. Then, you know, it's like everyone gives incredible performances that it's not just one above the other. They're all fucking great. Javier Bardem.
Woody Harrelson's great. Javier Bardem got the Oscar.
Yeah,
He's
and well
fantastic.
deserved.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
I mean, the dude had such a look, but knowing the scenes that you see him in, when you see him just walking up with that tube in his hand.
Yeah. And he's just totally, you can't stop watching him.
Hold on, my dogs are.
Hey, get away.
Sometimes they'll get in each other's faces and suddenly a fight breaks out. So if I stop it early on, there's no fight.
Yeah, you can't stop watching that guy in that movie. He's just.
And the scene with the guy at the convenience store with the quarter, where is it a quarter? He flips a quarter, yeah. And just, oh fuck, man! Like the intensity built in that scene alone should be taught in classes, in film classes.
I'm sure it is. You know, I'm definitely sure it is. It's a fantastic film. I think it's one of the best Coen Brothers film, which is saying a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but it's pretty goddamn fantastic. And everybody has a good performance. The whole cast, too, you know.
Yeah.
Brolin's wife is great. And, man, it's just so, so easy to love that film.
And it's shot so well. Like,
oh, yeah.
There are just so many moments in there from like the scene where like Brolin walks upon, like he sees it from afar and then he walks upon just the shootings and the death and the bag and everything, to just the close up shots. Like when they're in the hotel room together, Brolin and hey, chill out. Sorry, dog interruption.
Yeah, it's just, definitely it's a film that they show in film school, you know, because it's a masterclass of making film.
Oh, yeah.
What was the other movie you watched from 2007?
Oh, mine was both.
Oh, yeah.
it was the combo, but I must have watched one of them on Tubi because it rolled into playing Coffee. So I went ahead and got into a double feature of Coffee and Sheba Baby.
Uh-huh.
And I forgot how great Coffee is as a revenge film. Like I always, it's always blaxploitation, but fuck, she kills the fuck out of some people. Shoots the dude in the dick. Finds out her man is betraying her and he has her killed. Oh, Pam Grier is the queen.
Yeah. It's a pretty fantastic film, man.
Yeah, Sheba Baby's good. It's a totally different character, but man, Coffee's just fucking hardcore.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's pretty fantastic.
The last movie I watched, we watched Megan on Peacock. It finally dropped on there.
Yeah, I saw it too.
Oh, what'd you think?
I enjoyed it. Had a good time.
Yeah, it's fun. Had a couple of weird moments for me, like character-wise, like, you know, through the whole, like, montage beginning where they're the death scene. The sister never really seems too broken up about her sister dying. Like she never really has any grief or any sadness about it. It seems kind of weird. And she just seems really preoccupied about other shit.
Well, she's preoccupied with the work, you know?
And yeah.
The whole movie is her trying to learn to love somebody else.
Yeah. I guess I really didn't even think about it that way because, yeah, she does not shed a tear, I think, for her sister, which was weird. And then she shows up for this niece that obviously they haven't had, like, a lot. You know, she's a small kid, but the actress that played the kid was so good.
Yeah. Because
she would come into scenes and you already know the tone just by the look on her face. And I love how it was kind of dealt with at the end. As SNL did a pretty funny Megan sketch last week or a week before last with Aubrey Plaza and did a Megan 2.0.
Oh, I gotta check that out. Sounds pretty funny. But yeah, I enjoyed making it. Had a good time watching it.
Yeah, I mean, it had like kind of the sense of Chucky with her, you know, quips and comebacks. And so there was a bit of fun to it. But there's some fucking violence in there. I mean, they had that dog chew on that girl's arm after she had already been in a car wreck. And I'm like, this girl is beat the fuck up. And this is the kid in the movie.
Yeah, and the Peacock version is not rated. You know, the theater version was PG-13, so it didn't have all the gore.
Oh fuck! I didn't even think about that because you have the openings scene with the parents and the car wreck, and then you have the scene where she goes to try to save Megan from the dog, and the dog grabs hold of her arm. And you just feel, they don't show the blood on the kid though, but you tell from the kid's face just the horror of it. Of course, killing a dog in a film is always bad, but.
Well, I mean, they're not killing a dog.
Yeah, I know, but it's a bummer to watch as a viewer. That's why they have the website, Does the Dog Die, for movie viewers that don't want to see dogs die.
Yeah, but it's like the old joke. Somebody throws a sack of babies in a lake.
Fuck.
Okay. And half of the people go, oh. And then they say somebody throws a sack of puppies in a lake. And they're just, oh, you know, there's a bigger response to the puppies. It's always like that.
Well, I think I have the response to the puppies in a bag because you know people who have gotten rid of puppies that way. Like back in the country. Yeah, I mean, we're old enough that like I lived out in the country and knew people who they would get their dog fixed, but their dog would have babies and they would just get rid of them. You know, I knew a fucking dude that took his dog out into the woods and let it go because he thought dogs would instinctively just survive on their own. And I said, you just put your dog to a slow death.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I saw Ant-Man in 3D. Yeah. What'd you think?
I loved it. I had fun. It was a great trip back to the theater. How was it in 3D, though? Because I love the Quantumverse.
It was pretty good in 3D. I had a good time. I mean...
Oh, cool.
I have some problems with it. MODOK, what the fuck?
Are you talking about my man? Where's my man, MODOK? Are you talking about my man, MODOK, here?
Yeah,
I fucking love MODOK.
But come on, dude, the CG for that
was weird as fuck.
Weird
as
fuck.
But that's what MODOK is. MODOK is a weird fucking guy. Like MODOK is a giant head with tiny hands and feet. But it's I just love it because it's a weird concept, and they were able to put it into a movie. It's taken different forms in the comics, and obviously, like, it's so weird that Patton Oswalt did a comedy series on Hulu with MODOK. And there's a whole MODOK family and everything. But I just love the kind of body horror of it. And they played it for laughs in there, but there is, like, something just horrific about what happens to his body to become MODOK that I love. And I love the silliness of it, too. I mean...
Yeah, it's pretty silly. I thought it was kind of slow at times and didn't really make much sense to me. You know, at times I thought, you know, they get to the quantum realm and they're not like, oh, wow, look at this. This is amazing. They're no.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, okay.
Well, I felt like it was weird because, like, we had just gotten Michelle Pfeiffer to come in, you know, from the last movie. And now she's pretty much kind of leading the story by telling everyone, like, hey, this is a dangerous place. We got to find the other people. We got to get the fuck out. And I thought it was weird to have Bill Murray in it, because Bill Murray is just always going to be Bill Murray unless he's in a Wes Anderson film. And so he just kind of came across as like this non-threatening.
He was boring.
Yeah, I like him. I like seeing him, but I didn't feel like it was super great.
I thought it was a waste of Bill Murray.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have somebody in there that's going to be kind of villainous, I almost feel like it'd be somebody fun to counter with Michelle Pfeiffer that could play better than those two play.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And even Michael Douglas was kind of surprising because they didn't give him a lot to do, but he has a big Hank moment at the end, which is kind of fun because Hank is really kind of a piece of shit. They don't show it a lot in the movies, but in the comic, he's always a piece of shit human being. He beats his wife, and he's like one of the darkest, terrible Avengers that they've ever had. And they kind of make him seem that way. They hint at him, not being the greatest person at all, but he wants his wife and he wants his family. So it's kind of interesting him and Scott having that same parallel.
And I did think that the Wasp.
Yeah.
Didn't do much.
I think Evangeline Lilly has kind of burned herself because she has a pretty strong anti-vax stance that came out when she joined Marvel, and I don't know if they've like lessened her involvement, but yeah, she's kind of been reduced to like almost the sidekick love interest, and that's it.
Yeah, that was.
She didn't really have much of a story at all. She's just, she's a step parent to Cassie, but we didn't really see that relationship at all.
No.
She's reunited with her mom, which we probably saw the most of. Like, she obviously loves having her mom back around. It's such a weird scenario that you have all these scientists who have this kid who plays with shit that is like could be a weapon of mass destruction, being able to travel to the quantum realm like this. Like, and they're just kind of casual about her inventing something that can destroy or disrupt things in a huge way. So,
yeah, it didn't make much sense,
Yeah.
It was just a plot device.
Yeah. But for me, Ant-Man's always just fun. I mean, the one thing I was kind of bummed about is like they kind of seem to have this weird trend. Like in the first movie, one of the fight sequences, the music they used was The Cure. And then they brought in The Smiths in the second one. And so I was waiting for like some sort of emo tribute trilogy of fight songs, but it didn't happen in this one. I will point out, though, that we have the Skrull invasion coming soon in the Marvel Universe. And so we don't know what characters are actually Skrulls because they impersonate everyone. So the Skrulls have been here since the 90s. Some of these people could have been Skrulls during this time. But Ant-Man takes that one out of the equation in a sense where they're in the quantum realm the whole time. So they never have to deal with that. Because a lot of the Marvel movies I watch now and I go is because like I think there are some characters that have already been replaced by Skrulls. And we'll find out in that Disney miniseries when it comes out.
Huh. Yeah. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because it's a whole, like, movies now, like, you used to have, like, a blockbuster, and then you'd have, like, a few sequels, and they would sort of get bad. Now you have, like, a universe of movies and TV series so intertwined you have to watch them all to kind of keep up. And I mean, growing up a Star Wars and comic book fan, I can't even imagine having this much content, but I can't watch it all. Like, I don't watch all the Star Wars ones. Like,
you can.
I mean, I could, but like, there's just so much content out there. And I can only imagine people who see comics now go, how can I just jump in and start reading? Because the movies are overwhelming. There's so much content.
Yeah, speaking of Star Wars, Mandalorian's in a couple of days.
Fucking excited for that, man. I'm really enjoying Pedro Pascal. Like, just seeing him. I know people hated Wonder Woman 84, but he's the best thing in Wonder Woman 84. Like, Max Lord is a real piece of shit in the comics, so it was really great to see him get a story arc. Uh-huh. And I'm enjoying The Last of Us. That show's just him and that girl have such chemistry together that it's amazing when you see films that have none, because you have like an adult and a child, and she is so on point in the thing, in this, every scene she does. And it almost seems like she's just having fun with him on the screen. Like, I really, really love that show. And every episode has just been heartbreaking, fantastic, emotional, exciting. And this last one was really great. And I loved Melanie Lynskey as kind of this evil villain in the town.
So I watched The Beaver.
Oh, the Jodie Foster, Mel Gibson flick.
It wasn't that bad.
Wasn't?
No.
What's it? It's about a guy who has a puppet that he talks to, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's really about someone that is so depressed he needs this puppet. And then he runs a toy company and uses the beaver to come up with his beaver toy. You know, and it's kind of a cute movie. It lost money because Mel at the time,
yeah,
was dealing with
bad press.
Yeah,
he had called some cops sugar tits when he was being pulled over for being drunk.
Well, no, it was when he was being real shitty to his wife.
Oh, his wife and the police showed up. That's what it was. I thought he had a DUI, but yeah, because Jodie Foster worked with. That was weird that Jodie Foster wanted to work with him even after he had that big incident.
Oh, well, she directed the film.
Yeah. Do you know who wrote it?
No. But yeah, it was pretty fun. I enjoyed it. And I also watched Clueless. Speaking of Paul Rudd.
Jesus, man. Clueless is fucking great. I love Amy Heckerling and the movie she's done.
I could have passed on it.
Oh, really?
One for me. I mean, because at the time, I was 30 years old and... One for me.
Yeah.
You know, so, it was worth watching to know that I didn't like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a snapshot of that time period, but again, the millennials will look at that and that'll be kind of their high school film, you know?
It was kind of weird how, Paul Rudd was dating a 16-year-old.
Yeah. So, and they're like stepbrother and sister. Or were at one point, because weren't they his who was the Dan Hedaya was her dad.
Dude, and they both had, I don't have a family tree to figure out what the hell was going on. I just know she was 16. And he was in college.
Yeah. Well, it's based on the book Emma. 16 was pretty old by then.
I guess so. Also, I watched Flashdance. I'd never seen it before.
Oh, shit. Flashdance is pretty good.
Pretty good film, man. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when I last watched it, but every time I see Jennifer Beals, I always just think of her dancing that dance scene. Actually, the one scene I think of is the scene where she goes to dinner with the dude and rolls up her panties and hands them to him at the table.
Yeah.
That's fucking hot.
Yeah, but yeah, I had a good time watching that. It was pretty badass. And this morning I saw Room 237.
Love it.
Now, in my opinion,
what is your take?
My take is that most of the people that were talking about The Shining are now Q.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you're going to get the most extreme crazies in 237.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyone who's never seen Room 237 is a documentary about the people who believe that there is underlying stories being told by Stanley Kubrick through his imagery in his films, specifically The Shining being a story that he's saying that he helped fake the moon landing.
Yeah, and the funniest part about that film is that one guy is playing the film backwards and forwards at the same time and trying to get symbolism out of it, like that is actually possible.
Yeah.
I mean,
their hook that gets you to watch this is that Kubrick took notes on everything. He was very detailed. There's like a warehouse of all his notes and the details and the way he shot things. So there is assuming that everything has a placement and a reason to be in every scene of that film. You know, the Apollo spaceship that the kid is wearing in scenes is, you know, referencing Apollo 11. Yeah, and just stuff, but everything seems to point to it's fake. The moon landing was fake.
Yeah. But anyways, it's definitely Q that made that movie.
My favorite breakdown is there's somebody who is explaining in the scene in the kitchen. There is specific, I believe it's cans of tomatoes that have like an Indian on the face.
Baking powder.
Yeah. And so the way the Indians are facing means something. Like they're able to figure like, yeah, it's tough because it is people who for some reason are trying to find something. So there's mentally something wrong with them to just spend their like time diving into this.
Life doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, the whole point of the movie is it's about the conquering of Indians.
Yes. Yeah, that was why that specific brand was used, that the U.S. had taken the land from the Indians. There were the Indians weren't, wasn't it because the land that the hotel was on was Indian land, and that is the reason?
Yeah, it was the Indian burial ground, you know, like Poltergeist.
Yeah. But yeah, if you love like insane conspiracy theories drawn from a movie, like if you've seen The Shining many times, you just watch it and you go, yeah, okay, this is this. These people see so many different things.
Yeah, it's amazing. The most fun thing about it is how fucking wackadoodle those people are.
Yeah, because to me it was presented like this serious documentary, and as you hear them talk, because they go through so many different people, you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, but huh? Like, you're giving this crazy person, but it helps bring out like people who just go into conspiracy theories who give you the I do my own research line.
Yeah, of course.
These are those people.
No shit, you do your own research.
Which means I cherry pick what I read.
Blumhouse is doing start making video games.
Oh.
La horror games.
I'm excited.
I started watching American Auto.
I tried the first season and it just kind of petered out for me.
I haven't watched it all, the first season. Did you notice that John Barinholtz was from Superstore?
Yes.
Yeah, it's the same guy that created Superstore that did American Auto.
Yeah, and like some things hit, some things miss for me, but like I would put it on and just forget it that it was on. Like it wouldn't be, I'd end up doing something else. It couldn't keep my attention.
Wouldn't compelling.
No, I mean, but it had some funny jokes and it was referencing like modern day stuff. They did a whole episode about how their self-driving cars don't recognize black people.
Yeah. and I started watching Picard.
I'm curious how far you get, because I didn't get far before I quit.
I don't think I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what it is.
I heard season three was good and worth watching, so I may just skip to season three, you know. Because that's when he gets the whole band back together.
Yeah, and that's what I felt like it was always going to be, is like, once we get to a point where we need to improve ratings, we'll just have everyone come back.
Yeah, that's apparently what they did in the new one. They're coming out with more Lord of the Rings movies.
Wow, what a bad idea that is. and it's the Warner Brothers, like the Warner Bros, who just got Discovery Plus and eliminated all their animation, is getting rid of scripted television because they don't like to play writers, but they're going to have tons of reality shows. They're going to have a fucking Lord of the Rings, and it's going to be shit trash. Ugh.
What are you going to watch for 2008?
Oh, I'm very excited because I've picked three films.
Okay.
Tropic Thunder.
Okay.
Iron Man.
Okay.
And Rock and Rolla.
I'm going to do Crystal Skull.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
Okay. Oh.
Now I kind of want to watch it because I want to talk about it again.
We'll see you guys next week on the show.
See ya.
Bye.